I don't want to trash talk the Calgary Flames too much. They did finish first. They did have a terrific season. And, you know, them getting knocked out of the playoffs by the 8th seed Avalanche in 5 games, I mean, of course, that's got to hurt. And of course, there are fans up here going, yay, Calgary lost, anybody but Calgary and all that. But I don't know. When I think about the Flames losing in the fashion that they did, I think about teams, you know, coming in on a hot streak or timing things so they're playing the way they need to play heading into the playoffs. You know, like you were saying before the podcast, Matty, you know, they were coasting for a little while after they had clinched basically first place and never mind getting a playoff spot. They knew they were in. I mean, that's true for any team that knows it's in the playoffs. And there's an experience factor there too. It's not as though the Flames have been perennial, long playoff contenders, you know, with tons of experience. I'm thinking teams like Boston these days, or, you know, any team that's got a load of playoff experience that has that to lean on to know what it takes. But, you know, the Western Conference situation is exactly like 2006. Like right now, as we sit, we've got San Jose and Vegas are playing Game 7 tonight. This is Tuesday, April 23rd. And if San Jose loses, that means the top 4 seeds in the Western Conference are out. Now, that last happened in 06. Obviously, the Edmonton Oilers were the number 8 seed that year.
Yes, and, you know, it happened, and then the Oilers beat Detroit in the first round, who had a million points, 120-some points, and the Oilers got into the playoffs with a late rally, you know, getting Dwayne Rolison in the trade from Minnesota, and they got into the playoffs. And they were playing well then. Detroit had coast, you know, had way better record than anybody else and was coasting into the playoffs. And that's, you know, it is a cliche that if you get in, you got a chance. But you should also say, if you get in and you are playing well at that time, and you have been playing, like, you know, cliche playoff hockey for 6 weeks, you don't have to gear up for another level because you're already playing it just to get into the playoffs. And it happening with Tampa Bay, you know, playing against the Columbus team that had a scrape in, you know, the last couple of weeks to make the playoffs. And certainly it happened to Calgary. Not so much Winnipeg, because St. Louis, you know, those two teams in terms of on paper were very close, but, you know, to take it another step farther, St. Louis was last in the league on January 2nd, so they were playing probably better than Winnipeg. So, you know, the playoffs are what there should be. Crapshoot. Carolina scraped, barely got into the playoffs, and it's 3-3 against the Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals. So, if you're a team now that is still left and you dispatched a good team early, you're just sitting back, say, just keep playing. And if we're the Islanders or Columbus, just keep playing. And by the time you get to the second round, we can throw all those names in a hat and who knows who's going to win.
You know, and as, you know, as much as the Edmonton Oilers were basically out of it, you know, a month before the season ended, they were mathematically in it till the last week of the season. And you can't help but think back to some of those games they could have, should have won. Who knows? Maybe we're talking about the Oilers knocking off the Flames in the first round. Although you got to, you know, the Colorado Avalanche are in some ways like the St. Louis Blues. They weren't playing up to their potential this season. And I think we're seeing, you know, just how good that team is, or their top players are, Nathan MacKinnon being the chief among them.
Well, he looks the closest in the league to Connor McDavid when he's got the puck coming up the ice. You can't take it off him. Can't take it off him either when he's got the puck in your end. I think he shoots the puck better than Connor. I think Connor is faster and can weave in and out of people probably better than MacKinnon. But that, those, their three best players, Rantanen and MacKinnon and Landeskog, certainly outplayed Calgary's best players. And that's usually the way it is in the playoffs. Everybody works hard. And if your best players working hard are better than the other team's best players working hard, and in Calgary's case, Goodrow and Monahan and, you know, Tkachuk, Lindstrom, you know, you're going to win the games. And they did. And they got tremendous goaltending from Mike Smith and still lost in 5 games. And Brad Treleving says they might have lost in 4 games if Smith wasn't really good. So his team didn't do it, but all life lessons. You know, you go in and you get spanked, and next year you come back and you're usually better.
Yeah, you know, think about the opportunities lost for playoff experience, and you can't go back in time and change things. You know, thinking about the Edmonton Oilers or any team that didn't make the playoffs or barely got in or barely missed it, like Montreal must be, you know, wishing they had another shot at, you know, not finishing 2 points back of Columbus. You know, but then again, I mean, it really depends on the team and where the teams are at when they're heading into the playoffs, like you said. There's no saying that if Edmonton had made eighth place or if Montreal had made eighth place in the East, that they would have been the ones knocking off those top seeds. It would just be a completely different dynamic, completely different series. You know, and thinking back to 2006 too, I mean, it's sliding doors. It's, you know, forks in the road. Like if one thing doesn't happen in a game, we were talking about, you know, maybe the second round series that Edmonton played against San Jose in 06 and that pivotal game three, you know, that double overtime game, or was it triple?
More than one. I know
it was
that.
More than one. It was a long night. Yeah. But, you know, that game goes San Jose's way, and then we're probably not even sitting here talking about the 06 Oilers ever.
No. And, you know, it was shocking that they beat Detroit. They played a trap. Detroit had no, you know, idea they were going to do that, and the Oilers won the series in six games, in large part because Chris Osgood was hurt. They had to play Manny Legacy in goal. He was nowhere near as good as Dwayne Rolison in that series, and the Oilers won. But you're right. It's all – the playoffs, there's a very thin line between winning them and losing them often. Like last night, I was watching the Dallas game with Nashville, and Nashville had some good chances and hit the post and stuff, and Dallas looked better, but – Nashville could have won, and they didn't win, and now they're out. Another good team that's out, and Dallas, which scraped through the season, but had a really good goalie in Ben Bishop, is still alive. So there's not much to choose. And if you're the Leafs playing Boston tonight, who knows? All I know is that the Leafs' penalty killing has been terrible, and Boston's picking them apart the last, couple of times. I think they're 4-for-4 the last, you know, times they've had power plays. And if your penalty killing can't kill a penalty in the playoffs, you're in a lot of trouble.
I'm with Jim Matheson today here on the Oil Spills podcast. Matty, Ralph Kruger in recent days, you know, before Easter, you know, said he's not interested in coming back to Edmonton. You know, I don't know if he was ever really GM material. I think he's more of a – clearly he's been running a Premier League team in England for the last 6 years as a president, basically. And that's sort of the role that if for some reason he comes back to the NHL – that he would be able to step into, you know, outside of a head coaching role, not a general manager's role necessarily.
Bob Nicholson is doing that role, unless Bob Nicholson wants to step aside.
Exactly.
Ralph Kruger doing it. I don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, players come and go all the time. Players often get traded and come back to the teams they were on before. Heck, David Perron's played in St. Louis 3 times, you know, and sometimes a coach gets fired and comes back to coach the same team, but not in Ralph's case. I think it was been down that road once. And I don't want to go back to Edmonton. I do know that his wife wasn't too happy the way it ended here in Edmonton, because most people figured he was going to be the head coach for a while, and it didn't turn out that way. But I think Ralph's always up for a challenge, and I think he feels the president type thing is more up his alley. And I think Ralph's probably in the picture for the Rangers president job too. I wouldn't be surprised if Glenn Sather, you know, has contacted Ralph, because it's pretty well known that Ralph, you know, certainly knows his hockey and he's run a premiership team in soccer, different sport, but he's run an organization. And if the Rangers don't get John Davidson from Columbus, Ralph would be certainly, I don't think he would be fallback second option, but I, you know, because Davidson's real popular, but I think Ralph could do the job too, but not in Edmonton.
Because Peter Chiarelli was the president of hockey operations as well as general manager. I mean, as far as titles go and duties, I mean, those things are very fluid. Never, you know, in any organization, hockey team or whatever, it's not as though you have a set, you know, a bunch of things you have to do and accomplish as a president versus like a general manager. I mean, you know, obviously Bob Nicholson is filling that role right now. And I mean, moving forward, you know, there's no talk of hiring a president of hockey operations. They're talking about hiring a general manager.
Most president of hockey operations is the general manager.
Right.
John Davidson would be an exception in Columbus. Brendan Shanahan is an exception in Toronto. They oversee, you know, the operation of the team. But I also think that has something to do with the business end of things as well. But, you know, what often happens is you're the president of hockey ops and the general manager, and they all kind of fold into one another. But really, hockey operations is the, figuring out the pro scouting, figuring out the amateur scouting. And that's usually somebody else should be overseeing that whole thing rather than have the general manager who has to do the day-to-day stuff, but also has to worry about the what the pro scouts are watching and the amateur scouts and stuff. It's a lot of work for one person, but they usually give that's the job title, president, you know, coach, or rather general manager and president of hockey operations. And I think it's too much for one guy myself, but that's what usually happens. And whoever gets hired as a general manager here, I'm sure that'll be the same thing.
You know, and whatever the roles are, I mean, there are plenty of people who fill advisory roles as well. I mean, they're there to give advice. They're there to basically be an ear or an eye on how things are running. And if a general manager who, you know, is basically a figurehead or a hub for a team and how it operates, I mean, obviously that person can't operate in a vacuum. You know, he needs...
Well, usually, like a Brendan Shanahan, he's the buffer between the ownership of the team and the team and the players. He talks to the owner all the time. The general manager just does the day-to-day thing. But when you're also the president of hockey ops, then you got to be talking to the owner, you know, frequently as well. So, you know, like I said, it's a lot for one guy to do, and it works well in Toronto. Lou Lamoriello was the GM, but Brendan Shanahan, who was a player for Lou Lamoriello in Jersey, ran the whole show. And in Columbus, John Davidson's the president, but Keke Laineen and Jarmo runs the day-to-day stuff and makes the trades. And the president usually is more involved in terms of how much money they're going to spend for a player if they want to sign a player or in free agency, whether they can afford it.
Mark Cabshot is an interesting hockey person. I mean, he's been a longtime coach. He's been in WHL and a few different teams. He's coached on the world stage for Canada. He's been an assistant in the NHL. Originally, when Mark Habershad came on the scene, he was an Edmonton Oilers prospect. He was drafted by the Oilers in 1981. And if he had played pretty much on any other team at that time, like early when he was 20 years old or whatever, he likely would have been in a top six position if he wasn't for him playing for the Edmonton Oilers with Wayne Gretzky, Marc Messier, and all those all-stars and Hall of Famers they have. His opportunity, he probably didn't get the right opportunity for him if he played with anybody else pretty much. And he was with the organization for a number of years in the 80s before he was traded away. Tell me about Mark Cabshot. Now he's coaching the Prince Albert Raiders, who are the number one ranked team in all of Canadian junior hockey. They didn't even lose 10 games this year. I think they lost 9 games all Western Hockey League season. And now they're playing the Edmonton Oil Kings in the Eastern Conference Final. Right now they're tied 1 game apiece, and they have games 3 and 4 in Edmonton. Tell me about Mark Cabshot, Matty.
Well, I think he's, I asked him, I said, do you consider yourself a player or a coach? Because he's been both. And he says, well, I think I'm probably more coach than player. But he started playing hockey when he was 2 years old. So he's played hockey more than he's coached. But he won a Memorial Cup in Kelowna, and he's got a team Tied 1-1 with the Oil Kings. That is a Memorial Cup certainly threat to get back again, and it's a very powerful team with some good older players, and this is probably Prince Albert's shot. You know, they might fall off the map next year with a lot of graduating players. So he's a really good coach. He's coached World Juniors. He's coached the World Championship team for Canada. He was worked with Dave Lewis in Boston, hired by Peter Chiarelli, as a matter of fact, 2006. He was on the Olympic team in 1988. Grew up in Saskatchewan to parents who came from Luxembourg and dropped into Saskatchewan in dead of winter with very little money. No electricity in the house, no indoor plumbing. But his dad built him a backyard rink like any father, and that's how he learned to play. So he's only 56. It seems like he's been around forever, but he's of the same age that all those former Oilers are. They're in their late 50s, and you wake up 1 minute and they're then coming up to 60, and it seems like they're just 20s. And you're right, back in the day with the Oilers, if he'd been on another team that didn't have Gretzky and Messier, he'd have been a top six player. He was very skilled offensive player. And but to this day, he cherishes the fact that he was on that team. And there's a picture outside, just down from the Oilers dressing room, 1982-83 Oilers. And he's in a row with Kevin Lowe and Paul Coffey, Charlie Huddy, and Dave Hunter. In the same photo as Mark Messier and Grant Fuhr and Glenn Anderson and Yuri Curry, a lot of Hall of Famers. So he was a really good player. And I don't think he's ever lost his Oiler ties, even though he's playing the Oil Kings are owned by the Oilers. And he did say, you know, he was at Rexall place before it closed one time, sitting in the media room, and they had pictures of all the ex-Oiler stars on the wall. And he was talking to Dave Semenko, and he says, "Where's my picture?" And Semenko looked at him and says, "We're renovating." He says, "Maybe your picture will be up there in time, but we're renovating, so I wouldn't count on it." So he didn't get a picture up on the wall, but he did play for the Oilers.
Well, you know, one picture of Mark Habishat, I do remember back in the day, in those days with those that Oilers team in 82, 83, was he was part of the Red Rooster. It was a convenience store in Edmonton and beyond. They had a set of Oilers cards, and he had a card. Mark Habishat, I think he wore 23. Maybe it was 26. I don't remember. But anyway, I remember he had the, you know, it was the, had a curly hairdo. Maybe it was like Gretzky's.
Yeah, he had a mop of hair, because I looked at the picture when I was down at the rink, and yeah, he had a mop of hair. He still got some hair on, like a lot of the players back in those days that have lost their hair. And he said to me once too, he said, you know, he grew up on a farm poor, and he was 19 and he was playing for the Oilers, and he phoned home to his dad and he was complaining about a few things. And there was a pause on the other end of the phone. And his dad says, "Well, you could always quit." He says, "We're picking rocks in the next 2 weeks. So either quit complaining or come home." And as Mark said, good advice. I just took the advice and quit complaining.
You know, he went up and down over those years. So he's with the Oilers. You know, the Oilers farm team would have been with in Halifax, based in Halifax, or Moncton, maybe Cape Breton. You know, eventually he was traded, right? He traded to Minnesota.
Yeah, he was traded to Minnesota in the latter 80s. But he did play for Canada's Olympic team in 1988 in Calgary. So, yeah, he was back in the day. I remember Glenn Sather talking about how skilled he was, and he stopped short of, you know, legging on a little thick as he did with poor Chris Joseph, saying he saw a lot of Bobby Orr and Chris Joseph, and that's probably not the right thing to say. He didn't say that there was a lot of, you know, Henri Richard or something like that in Mark Habishat, but he was a very skilled player, and now he's a really good coach, and he's in a dogfight with the Oil Kings, who probably outworked the Prince Albert team the first two games and lost a game 1-0 and won a game in overtime.
What kind of a coach is Habishat?
He's a good coach. He learned from he said he learned from Sather and how the dynamic of a dressing room and star players and how they were treated. And he said it, it's legend that he wrote notes on everything back in the day. And he's got all these binders of notes and observations and stuff like that. But he said he learned an awful lot back in those days. And I think he's a player's coach and, he's not a pile driving guy, but he's won more than 500 games in the Western Hockey League, one of only eight coaches that have done that. So he's been around a while.
And he's not the sort of coach we'd ever expect to see back in the NHL as a head coach.
But I think he could easily be an associate coach in the NHL. Mm. I think he's got lots of reputation. I think he could be an associate coach in the NHL. And, it's funny, his associate coach last year for several years in Prince Albert, Dave Manson, decided he wanted to go coach with the Oilers farm team in Bakersfield as an assistant coach, for a change of pace. So I wouldn't be surprised especially if Mark's team happens to beat the Oil Kings and goes to Memorial Cup and they do well, I'm sure some NHL teams might come calling.
Now, the other tidbit of news that we've had Oilers-wise this past week is Todd McLellan being hired as the head coach of the LA Kings. And there was talk, I think the Buffalo Sabres were in the conversation talking to McLellan about coming in as their head coach. But LA is where he's going. He coached in San Jose in California for 7 years before coming to Edmonton. And obviously, he's got the relationship with Rob Blake, the general manager in LA, who played for him in San Jose. And now here he is back in the Pacific Division. Obviously, he's not waiting to get back into the coaching game right away. And obviously, he was high on the LA Kings list because they didn't take long to decide to hire him.
No, and a lot of coaches get fired and wait around for, like Alain Vigneault waited around a heck of a lot longer, I think, than Todd McLellan, who 5 months and he was back coaching again. And it's difficult when you're a head coach for a long time and then you're out of work and it's fine for a couple of weeks, but then you're looking at the games on TV and there's no rooting interest for any of your teams. There's no dog in the fight. You're just watching games like you're a fan sitting on the couch. And he wanted to get back in. I don't think he's got a very good team in Los Angeles. I think he knows that. Their better players are older players. They don't have much in terms of young players coming. I mean, Doughty and Kopitar and Dustin Brown and the goalie Quick are really good players, but there's not a lot of young players there. He's been told that the direction of the team is going to be to, drafting and developing. But I don't know when those young players are going to get to LA. But 5-year contract, he's got, he had a 5-year contract in Edmonton. He's got a 5-year contract in LA. And maybe this is the last contract he gets in the NHL as a head coach. But, he's staying in the Pacific Division, the one division he knows the best. So that there's a comfort level there for coaching against Edmonton and Calgary, and rather than taking a job in Buffalo, and he was interviewed in Buffalo, no offer, but he was interviewed. Two really good young players there, in Eichel and Dolan, which LA doesn't have. But you can go to the rink in LA in shorts and flip flops. You can't go to the rink in the middle of January in shorts and flip flops in Buffalo, and so LA it is, and I'll be glad to see him. It's nice to, a guy's coaching a team in the division that and they'll be playing the Oilers 4 or 5 times.
One thing I wonder is, obviously the all of McLellan's assistants, save Jay Woodcroft, were shown the door after the previous season, after 2017-18. Now, Woodcroft is coaching the Bakersfield Condors, but I can't help but think, I wonder how many assistants that McLellan's going to bring in. Would a guy like Jay Woodcroft be jumping over to the Kings?
Possibility. The only coaches they kept, I believe, when Willie Desjardins got let go, or Billy Ranford, the goalie coach, Marco Sturm, who was brought in very quickly with Willie Desjardins. He's going to hire at least one other coach. And Jay has the biggest connection to Todd over the years. But maybe Jay wants to stay as a head coach in the minors. I think Trent Yawney would be a possibility to get hired as well, because they have a history in San Jose and Edmonton to coach their defense. Very difficult. We talk about Ken Hitchcock's situation with a new GM coming in, and if a new GM comes in and it's not Keith Gretzky, he might want to hire his own coach. But what about the assistant coach? They're the ones that are twisting in the wind. You know, they're not the head coach, and they have no idea who the head coach is going to be. If maybe the head coach comes in and he wants to keep some of them, a new one, but chances are that's not the way it works out. So they're watching this GM coach search probably more than anybody else, because their jobs are in jeopardy.
You know, thinking about the way McClellan got fired, because he was fired when, you know, on the road, they had just started, or just about to start a road trip in San Jose, and he was let go before that game, and Hitchcock replaced him. Can't imagine that would have set, you know, that would sit well with anybody. You know, why wouldn't you just tell him before?
They could have, you know, if you're Peter Chiarelli, you're thinking, well, I didn't have a deal hammered out with Ken Hitchcock yet, but obviously was talking to him, and he could have probably fired Todd after a bad loss at home. I can't remember which team it was, Columbus or Buffalo. I can't remember which team it was in, you know, third week of November, rather than have the team get on a plane and fly to San Jose and, probably, you know, Todd's going out for dinner with either the GM or his coaches, and the next morning he's getting fired. So that would have been fine if Todd still had his house in San Jose, but I think he'd sold his house in San Jose, so he couldn't exactly go home.
Because, you know, even if, I mean, I'm no hockey executive, of course, and I'm not there to know what's going on, but you do have a Glenn Gullitson who, let's say Chiarelli had made up his mind, yeah, we're going to fire McClellan. Don't let him go on the trip. It would, you know, leave a bad taste in his mouth, and it would look bad. Because you have Glenn Gullitson who could probably guide the team for a game or two while you're still hammering things out with Hitchcock. Don't you think?
It was poorly run. Poorly run.
Yeah. And this is a question.
And, you know,
this
and is a question Peter said it was very difficult to fire Todd, and probably was. That was his first hire as a general manager of the Oilers, but it wasn't handled well. And he could have just done it before he got on the plane. It's one thing to trade players at the trading deadline while they're on a plane going somewhere, because that's the trading deadline and you don't really know if the deal's going to come down or what. So sometimes a guy is, you know, on a plane with you, and the next minute, you know, you're going tapping him on the shoulder on the plane and say, oh, by the way, you got traded to Buffalo. So we'll land in Edmonton, but you got to find your way to Buffalo. So that's a little different. But with a coach, I think it could have been handled certainly differently.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.